Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Amy Eddings, filling in for Brian Lehrer. And before we move on, I just wanted to take a moment and remind people we received lots of calls from folks. Sorry I couldn't get to them about the Toyota recalls, different people calling in with concerns and comments about the problems they were experiencing with their vehicle. Please continue to go to our website, Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org, post your comments. And as our last guest from the Wall Street Journal mentioned, check out SaferCar, SaferCar.gov. It calls itself the nation's premier source of vehicle safety information from the government serving the public interest. You might be able to find a lot of your questions answered there. Now, here in New York City, an awful lot about your life may be determined before your fifth birthday. Kindergarten admissions tests are required by nearly all selective public and private schools, and our next guest says these scores have a lot of power in deciding which children are gifted and which are not. But in reality, she says, these tests are worthless. Jennifer Senior, contributing editor to New York Magazine, is here to talk about her article, The Myth of the Gifted Child, the Junior Meritocracy. Jennifer, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
So why do we even have these kindergarten admissions tests here in New York City? How do you test a four-year-old to see if he or she is gifted and talented?
Well, there are two separate questions. The answer to why is a supply-demand question, I think, right? I mean, lots of, you know, kids in New York wanting to go to fancy-schmancy schools, whether they're public or private, you know, good schools, selective schools. And can you test a four-year-old? It's sort of like, how do you touch a porcupine?
Cute.
I mean, delicately, you know.
Right.
I don't exactly know. I mean, you hear all sorts of stories about, you know, testers, because they walk into a room with a stranger, you know, to take these selective tests.
Right. Can you describe to me what these tests are? Do these people play with kids and talk? What is it?
It's a very, and it depends on the test, right? I mean, this is another problem if you're a first-time parent, kind of getting through the smog of all these acronyms and different tests that you're taking. But if you want to go to one of the elite private schools in the city, then chances are your child is going to have to take the ERB, which is a modified form of an IQ test known by its acronym, the WPSI. And that is, it's administered by somebody who has some kind of, you know, kind of psychology background, but isn't necessarily a PhD or a practicing psychologist. That's my understanding. It's a licensed kind of person to administer the test, but that is the one thing where, you know, it's a little vague what the credentialing is. If you're taking the Stanford-Binet IQ test, which is to get into Hunter, that's administered by an actual psychologist. And both of those are one-on-one, and yes, there's some interaction with the child. Stanford-Binet, you know, the psychologists who administer the Stanford-Binet, they do coax the kids out from under their desks if they hide, you know, or if they start talking about their goldfish, you know, Zoe and Tangerine. In the middle of a question, they'll follow up and try and pursue tangents and get the kids comfortable. If you're trying to get into a gifted and talented program, then you're just sitting at a desk and, you know, you're being administered this by, you know, kind of an administrator from the New York City public school system, and you're filling in bubbles on a worksheet, and it's very kind of rigid and, you know, not interactive. And my impression is that it's not, you know, that it's kind of threatening, that it's not
right.
As easy going.
Yeah. Well, in your article, you write these admissions tests can really set a kid up for years to come, even though it's just a snapshot in time of where a four-year-old's mind is at. What does it tell me about that? So your four-year-old takes this test, yay, scores high, gets into Hunter College Elementary School. Then what happens? Is the child ever retested to see if he or she still deserves to belong in a gifted, talented program?
No, there's no policy of retesting, which is what every person, you know, in who thinks about these things in academia will tell you. But what happens is you get in at four, and you're suddenly in this terrific enriched environment, and you're reaping all the rewards. And as long as you can hack it, for example, at Hunter, as long as you can hack it and you're doing fine by third grade, you're in, and that's it. As long as you can hack the curriculum. And the truth is, lots of kids can handle, you know, an enriched curriculum, and all kids would certainly benefit from one. But the statistic that I use in my story is that if you test as a four-year-old over 130 on an IQ exam, the odds of your retesting over 130 as a 17-year-old are only 25%. Because, you know, four-year-old IQs are that unstable. Mm-hmm. The brain is still in flux. So it is it's kind of ridiculously unfair that these kids are sort of tracked immediately into these incredibly wonderful schools and programs, and other kids are not. You know, you can see where the policy consequences are. Right. Would start to crop up here.
Exactly. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Amy Eddings, filling in for Brian Lehrer. And if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Jennifer Senior. She's written an article about the myth of the gifted child, the junior meritocracy, for New York Magazine. And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think the kindergarten admissions tests are the best way to decide if your child is gifted? And how far are you willing to go to prep your kids for these exams? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment online at WNYC.org. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. I'd like to bring Dr. Samuel Meisels into the conversation. He's president of Chicago's Erickson Institute. Jennifer, you interviewed him for your article. Dr. Meisels, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC.
Thank you.
So Jennifer talked about these tests as being just a little snapshot in time, and that there really isn't any follow-up later to see how gifted and talented somebody at four turns out to be at 17. Tell us more about these tests and what they're designed to do.
Well, one of the biggest problems is that we don't really know what gifted and talented means. We don't know especially what it means at age 3 or age 4 or at age 5. And these tests are basically designed to see who scores high on an IQ test. IQ and giftedness are not the same thing. We're about to enjoy the Winter Olympics, and we'll see tremendously gifted and talented athletes. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we gave them all an IQ test, how high they would score. But at the same time, no one's going to argue that whether or not they're gifted and talented, they are. The problem is that in this situation, we're defining giftedness in terms of an intelligence quotient.
How much of a difference could a few IQ points in either direction make for a child's placement in a gifted and talented program?
It makes a huge difference for the way these programs are set up, because they have a cutoff, as Jen said, around 130 or so, and that is the indicator that you have to get through. That's the gateway you have to move through in order to get into the program.
I'm just trying to say that
doesn't necessarily mean that you're gifted and talented. It just means that you score high on that test, and that may mean that you've had a lot of preparation that your parents have spent money on, that you're coming from a very verbally oriented home. The Stanford-Binet, for example, is gives a privilege to children who are privileged by growing up in a very verbal home. In a nonverbal home where a child may have fabulous artistic skills, for example, that child may not do as well on the Stanford-Binet, and that may be the gifted child.
Mm. The city streamlined the gifted program and now relies more on standardized scores and hopes that it did this with the hope of leveling the playing field and allowing more low-income and minority kids into the gifted and talented program. But Dr. Meisels, you say that backfired, and I think this is speaking to your point about the demographic that tends to test well at this four-year-old level. Could you explain a little bit more about that and why the city's effort to streamline backfired?
Well, the city is trying to have a standard way of evaluating children for entry into these programs. And what the city's trying to do is to come up with something that is fair, something that's equitable, that gives everyone the same chance. And so they adopted two tests, the Otis Lennon School Ability Test and the Bracken School Readiness Test, or Bracken School Concepts Test, for that purpose. The problem is that children are so different when they come in, and the differences may have very little to do with whether or not they're gifted. It may have a lot to do with what their early experiences are like, a lot to do with how they've been raised up to that point, but very little to do with what their potential might be to show us some extraordinary abilities later on in their life.
We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Beth from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I am a mother of four in Manhattan, and my oldest is 14, so I've seen four groups of kids go through that four-year-old testing scenario. And something that's very interesting that I found is that kids who test really well at four, their parents have this expectation of them to perform as a genius for the rest of their life. And often these kids turn out to be just average. And it's a lot of pressure and a lot of disappointment that the parents are feeling. I'm sure the kids pick it up. And, you know, that's sort of a negative of testing well, which you would think, oh, my kid tested well. What could be the problem?
Right.
And I have four kids. They've all developed completely differently at different times. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous that they test at 4 years old, you know, impacts where you're going to go to school at this point.
Beth, thanks so much for your call. Jennifer, you talked about this pressure from a different point of view. You were talking about this market for prep materials, parents spending lots of money to get their kids, their four-year-olds ready for this test. What were you finding about the kind of pressure on parents?
Well, that there is immense pressure because, you know, it started out that reasonable people were not capitulating to this kind of pressure and, you know, prepping their children. But then you find out that a perfectly normal parent has decided that they are going to prep their kid and they are going to shell out a fair amount of money to do so. And you look at your kid who isn't benefiting from the same prepping, and pretty soon everybody's doing it, and those who can afford it are pulling away from those who can't. And it becomes gruesome. I also think the caller's point was terrific. I think that these are dangerous, they're burdensome labels, you know, for a four-year-old to handle, and that, you know, they can actually have really peculiar, you know, kind of consequences, as she was saying. I mean, they can, you know, kind of stifle a kid's willingness to take risks. They can make a kid terrified of failure, you know, or ashamed of failure. It's not really fair all around, I think. But just getting back to the test prep frenzy, it's a problem.
Dr. Meisels, what would, if school stopped weighing the tests so heavily, what would they use instead to make admissions decisions?
It's unfortunately not an easy thing. As I said, we're not even sure what giftedness is in young children. Though it's also the kind of thing where some people believe that you can, that when you see it, you know it's there. My more cynical friends tell me that that parents who think their children are gifted are just merely seeing their children as being smarter than they are, and therefore they must be gifted. I'm not sure that's the way it works. What I would like to see is an opportunity for children to show us this combination of high ability and high achievement. You're not going to see one or the other, but you need to see both in order to begin to think about giftedness. And the only way we're going to tell that is by spending time with kids. So first of all, I would want to improve all of the early childhood programs that we have so that parents weren't feeling that the only way that their smart kids will not be held back is by being in an unusual or a special program.
Dr. Samuel Meisels, I'm sorry, we'll have to leave it there. Dr. Meisels from the Erickson Institute, thanks so much for joining us. Jennifer Senior of New York Magazine, thanks again for joining us here on WNYC. The conversation continues online at WNYC.org.